Well, how do you keep your head above water? How do you profit the day after the dollar crashes? We'll get Damon's advice and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Damon, how do we weather this storm? What do people do individually, assuming all this comes to be?
Well, I think there are some things you can do. You probably want to own some gold. I think that makes sense that you do have some gold in your portfolio. Common stocks, some of them I think are also rising, some of them at a very rapid rate. And they're as of right now, some of them are rising a lot faster than the dollar's going down. I think you do need to think about food and how you're going to feed yourself somehow. Particularly, you're at a disadvantage if you live in a major city.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Because how are you going to feed yourself? I mean, you're dependent upon paying for food with currency. If the currency were to get rejiggered, the inflation that would happen on the street would be extreme. So, people that live in the countryside, people that live as our grandparents and our some of our grandparents did, knowing how to farm. And my grandparents didn't live that way, but my wife, certainly knows how to pickle, and she knows how to can, and she knows how to kill a chicken if need be, I suppose. I don't know, but I'm counting on her, really. I don't know if I have the courage to do that. But
if you have a money market account when this happens, are you protected or are you in trouble there?
You're probably okay, but your money market would be denominated in dollars, so you might have a problem in that regard. I mean, if the dollar breaks, it breaks 2008 lows, we will likely make some very significant course changes, and I'm okay with that. I mean, unlike there are a lot of investment managers out there that are kind of, they're contrarian. I've never been a contrarian. I never have wanted anything other than what the market wanted. If the market wants to go up, I want to go up with the market. If we're in a bear market, I'm okay with that too. If the dollar wants to collapse, I know it's going to bring about a lot of changes. But as an investment manager, I'm going to do everything I can to find a way to, shepherd, our investors through it. And to find a way to not only survive, but thrive in it and from the movement.
So I'm trying to pin you down on a percent of this all happening.
Yeah, you're still on that. You're still on that.
Yes, I am.
Well, I think it's probable. I think it's very probable. I think it's probably pretty much 100%.
Really?
Yeah.
And you're normally not wrong, are you?
I've not been wrong about many things. That's not true. I've made many mistakes. I make them all the time. If bear market tops, I was one of the few people that called the 2000 top. Did radio at the time, George. I was on 45 stations with a financial talk show for 5 years. Yeah. So I was very vehemently, and we rode that whole thing down from 2000 to 2003. There was a 70% melt in the NASDAQ. We also did liquidate all our personal real estate in 06, and I begged other people to do the same. But you get people at market tops, people don't want to sell. And then in 2008, of course, I launched our fund that I initially capitalized, and we pretty much nailed everything in sight. So, but I make mistakes all the time. I think where I differ maybe with other investors is when I do make mistakes, I try to cut them very quickly.
Sure. You don't hang in there.
Well, it's not important. You don't want to do that. It's okay to make mistakes, which it's like a person sitting by a fire. If a little coal flicks off the fire and it lands on you, it's okay if it stays on there a second. But a loss, if it allows to stay on you too long, it can really burn and hurt you. So you don't want to ride bear markets in or you don't want to be unaware to the changes that are occurring to you. There's a great story about Sully Sullenberger, and everybody knows this story now. But the critical element that I think about when I think about Sully Sullenberger, this is the man that, saved all those people on that plane that hit the birds after takeoff in LaGuardia.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Sully Sullenberger was watching the instrument panel. Now, they're taught not to watch the instrument panel at all. In fact, the airline would tell the pilot, you should be flying autopilot. But Sully Sullenberger, faced with the circumstances of, oh, my God, You know, there's, you know, he had to have been looking at the instrument panel. He had to have been looking at the fuel gauges. He had to have been looking at the altimeter. He had to be looking at the oil pressure. And instead of, you know, looking out the rearview mirror, putting on funny glasses that everything is okay, he dealt with what was at hand. And as investors, as people, as human beings, I think if we're going to survive whatever the dice may throw us, we really need to be emotionally, psychologically present. And so that's important, to look at these things, not to be scared about them, but to be aware of it. We know the debt is unpayable. We know there's no conceivable means that debt is ever going to be paid off. And we know that the iPhones that everybody's buying are all being made in China.
That's right.
Along with the iPad. And those devices are some of the most strongest industries we have in the United States. So where do we have a hope of paying off all that debt? Do we start a global world war in the Middle East that we sell weapons and munitions into? I hope not. So we likely have changes taking place. They are taking place. And so we need to start thinking about this. So we need to have a situational awareness to survive what's at hand.
All right, back to the phones we go. Lynn in Columbia, South Carolina, first-time caller. Hi, Lynn.
Hey. I'm 60 years old, and I've worked really hard the last 35 years. I've done what I was told to do. I started putting money in IRA with my first year paycheck in 1976 and saved my money, and I never bought anything I couldn't pay for except for a house, which I paid off in 5 years. Consequently, I've never had a big house. I've never had fancy clothes. I've never had a fancy car, but I haven't been in debt. I've worked hard. I've saved my money, and now you're telling me, and I've seen it for myself, my money is worthless. I'm not getting paid any interest on it. I wanted to retire at 62. Now it looks like I'll never be able to retire, and you're telling me that what I need to do is buy a farm and move to the country and learn to farm so I don't starve to death when the dollar crashes?
Well, I don't know your personal situation, whether you have a backyard or something like that, you know. And you said, and when you were describing your life and the type of life that you've led, I immediately, the only thought that occurred to me is, what country do you live in? Because you're really an exception here, and a good exception.
Well, but what good has it done me? The money, I'm not getting paid any interest on my money. My 401k crashed.
Yeah.
What good has it done me to be good and save my money and not go into debt? And now I'm 60 years old. I'm looking at never being able to retire, and the dollar crashes, and I can't feed myself.
Jeez. How much did you have put away at one time, Lynn?
Well, I think that's a pretty personal question.
Of course, you called me.
Well, everybody should have something in reserve. And you sound like a lady with a lot of discipline and a good work ethic, and you are probably something you could teach to a lot of people. It's not anybody's fault that the dollar is disintegrating. And to say that the dollar is crashing, you know, look, when I was a kid, you know, I'm a kid that grew up in Queens, New York when I was a kid. A slice of pizza in Queens, New York when I was a kid was 20 cents, and it's now $2.50. And the real estate prices, I remember islands up in Maine being $5,000, and they're now $800,000.
Greed and stupidity, Damon. They can't keep spending the way they're spending. How come we're not cutting the budget? He's spending more and more and more.
Well, they can't cut the budget too aggressively. They can talk about cutting the budget, but they can't actually do it, because if they did it, it would unhinge the economy, because there are so many people that are employed by the government.
Yeah,
exactly. And it would really cause a problem.
It's a catch-22, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It's one of the reasons why, you know, I've always advocated going to a use tax instead of the income tax.
Oh, yeah.
But you've got a lot of people who work for the government in the IRS that would be out of work, and that's another problem.
Well, I hate people. I don't favor putting people out of work, but I definitely agree with more of a, you know, a flat tax or a use tax than this crazy tax code that we've got.
Oh my God,
we've got in place. It's insane.
It's so complicated too. Unbelievable. San Francisco, we go. Cliff, it's your turn. Go ahead, Cliff.
How you doing, George?
Good.
I just wanted to say, Damon, your perspective on this is definitely fresh, and you probably have a lot of people rolling on George's show. My question is in regards to just the specifics of the debt. You know, it's the word you used was ginormous. And, you know, we hear it all the time. And, you know, it's hard to know what it means, who's owed what, who owes it. Can you speak to those specifics a little bit?
Well, the debt is really, it's now owed by all of us. You know, they nationalized a lot of the debt. I mean, as we absorbed all the sins of the banks and the over-leverage of the banks, and now it belongs to all of us. It is the debt that was created, that was taken on for all the consumption during the last 7-8 years. It was the debt to, you know, I'll give you an example. So, you know, I shared with you that we sold all our real estate in 06. And
was that commercial primarily?
No, we had a home in the Caribbean, and we had a big piece of lakefront property up in the state of Maine.
Okay.
I've never really been a commercial real estate guy. I'm not a real estate tycoon. But a couple of nice pieces of property for my family. They'd appreciated a tremendous amount, and you know, we simply let go of those things. So and went we made like 300-400% in 4 years, 5 years. And those types, we're not seeing that type of movement lately. So but anyway, so there was this neighbor, so we're looking out at this neighbor and the house that we were renting out in Seattle, and I started seeing, and the guy was kind of modest and a modest income, modest guy, nice guy. And I started seeing all these toys appear in his yard. The boat, the big Ram truck, another boat. It was like, oh, where did this come from? I mean, I know it's money because it's like $20,000-$30,000 a toy. And where could it be coming from? Well, people were hitting their houses. They were getting home equity lines of credit. And so all the consumption that we saw was really based upon, you know, debt. That's the problem, is that it's not sustainable. So the debt is really debt that's owed by all of us. That's all.
I've noticed that banks have released their purse strings a little bit more.
A little bit, not much, really. And they shouldn't, really. I mean, most people are really not credit worthy. They're not. I mean, George, given the rate at which real estate is declining, right, which is, what is it, like anywhere from 10 to 15% a year right now?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Would you want to lend out money as a bank with 5% down?
No, I'd wait. I'd want more down.
You'd want more down, right. And but how much down? Because you're losing at 15% a year.
Well, and you can't ask for that much down. People don't have it.
They don't have it at all, and the sellers have not rationalized their prices yet, nor can they even afford, in many cases, to price their properties relative to what they should be priced.
Most houses are now underwater anyway.
Correct. Yeah, correct. Right. Like the whole U.S. economy. That's why we have a negative $65 trillion net worth.
Can we work our way out of this as a nation without going to this global economy?
The way we work our way out of it is to have the debt written off, to basically go through a bankruptcy.
Can you, as a nation? I guess you can, can't you?
And we certainly can, under global
IMF
direction.
Law, I guess you can.
Yes, yes.
Just wipe it all out. Boy,
it's been done.
A lot of people.
But it's been done. It's been done in South America. We had the South American debt crisis. We had the Asian crisis. We had all kinds of global crisis.
So there we are with no debt. It's all gone. We start all over again. Anybody doesn't like it, we attack them.
No, I hope not.
No. But I mean, what can they do?
Well, I think coming out of this, if we move towards a kind of an alignment of global governance, and we move through that process of kind of a new global structure, I think that you get an era maybe of a lot of prosperity, tremendous trade and cooperation, I think it's potentially a very good period.
Can we go bankrupt without this global economy, or would everybody just not care about our money anymore? The dollar is worthless.
I don't understand the question.
Well, if we go bankrupt and wipe out all our debt, mm-hmm. what's the dollar worth?
The dollar becomes worth less.
That's what I thought.
Not worthless, but worth less.
Worth less. Okay.
Yes. Maybe significantly less, but keep in mind the trend of a dollar being worth less. The dollar has fallen about 97% in the last 30 years. So, yeah. I mean, it doesn't have a lot of value left. I mean, my dad would, I mean, I hear stories of my father telling me he would go to a movie when he was a kid, I guess in the early 50s. He would go to a movie theater, he would see two matinees, and the movie theater would offer him an ice cream cone, and it would cost him all of 15 cents. And now what does it cost you to go to the movies? Well, it's about $9, $10 a ticket. It's about the $4 for the popcorn. We're already at 14.
Hey, do you ever go to a ball game with your family, a baseball game? It's a fortune.
Yeah, I imagine it's very expensive.
I bet you own the team.
Actually, I can't relate to organized sports, really. I don't understand sitting there and watching other people do things. I don't understand that.
Well, let's go to Owen in Billings, Montana, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Owen.
Thank you for taking my call, gentlemen.
Sure thing.
Hi, Owen.
Mr. Vickers, I would ask you if you have read a book called The Money Matrix of the New World Order.
I have not, but it sounds like a fascinating title. And I did love the actual Matrix, the movie, a whole bunch.
Well, then, Mr. Vickers, I would have to say the money matrix has you. We stopped using the dollar in 1964. We've been on the Federal Reserve note debt currency ever since, and debt is a negative, so we have no money, we have no dollar. And the dollar does not fall because there is no dollar. What you are actually seeing, that 97% drop in value, is the Federal Reserve note falling in value against what the dollar would have been if we had a dollar.
Okay. And?
What are your thoughts on that?
I have no thoughts. The trend is down. Yes, the Federal Reserve keeps printing like mad, and they debase the dollar.
Fiat money.
And we have a fiat currency, and everything that you're saying, I agree with you. I mean, we're not the only country doing that. There are many countries around the world doing that, and it's not responsible. I agree. If that's your point, I definitely agree with you.
The author of this book, he was talking about Philip Tilley. Your book, by the way, The Day After the Dollar Crashes, where can you get it?
Available on Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore, and kind of become a bestseller. And the endorsement by Glenn Beck didn't hurt, and being on your show, George, and I definitely love Coast to Coast.
We dwarf Glenn Beck's show.
Well, you're on more hours every day, for sure.
He knows me. I can get away with that.
I love Glenn. I love you too, George.
He's a hard worker.
He may not agree
with what he says all the time, but he's a hard worker.
Yeah, it's true.
All right, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment with you, Damon. Final phone calls as we talk about the day after the dollar crashes and his belief that the way out of this eventually is also a new world order. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And on our next Coast to Coast program, Stan Deo joins us along with Professor James McCanny as we talk about Earth changes and pole shifts and how it affects the planet and you on Coast to Coast AM. I thought for a moment, Damon, they were talking about you there.
Yeah. I like Alex. He runs a good show. He's a good sport.
Yeah, we put him on a few years ago, and off he went into the sunset.
Yeah.
He does well. Let's go to Laguna Niguel in California. Hi, Susan. Go ahead.
Hi. Hi, George.
Hey.
Yes, for your guest. By the way, is it your first name, sir?
That's Damon.
Damon. Hi. Good evening.
Oh, you remind me of my brother-in-law, Damien Hirst, the highest paid living artist in the world.
Wow.
Yeah, not bad. You probably know him. But nonetheless, I have two questions for you, okay? And I think both of them, would really love for you to be able to say yes or no to them. The first one is, upon our government, let's say, bailing out the major financial institutions, and then those major institutions giving their CEOs millions of dollars in bonuses. Mm. Do you think this is correct to do, morally correct to do, or not? And then the next question was, because I'm pulled over on the side of the road,
careful.
The second question had to do with George earlier in the show did ask you if you were a part of the Illuminati. and you kind of skirted around it and gave the, you know, like, oh, I believe in this and I believe in that. You didn't say yes or no. And I was wondering if it's possible for you to answer it with yes or no. And I shall hang up.
No, you don't have to hang up. I don't, Georgia shouldn't have to hang up. I don't think, unless you want to.
She's going to listen to you on her radio.
Beautiful, beautiful. The Sea Crane radio. Well, I think on the first part, so the first part she said was about the bonuses being given out to executives.
Yeah.
Was it good, bad, or indifferent? I don't know that it was good. I think the striking one was AIG, I guess, that they gave out all those bonuses to AIG.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I think in the economy, the crazy economy that we live in, one could say that the New York City economy was probably very dependent upon those bonuses that come out every year, and that you know, the bonuses going to the executives inevitably wind up in consumption in some way, shape, or form. I mean, look at all the crazy
Switzerland.
Or Switzerland, that could happen too. I don't know. I'm not for it or against it. The government didn't give me a check. nor did the investment banking firm give me a bonus for not doing anything.
Wouldn't we have been?
We shorted the market in 08. Our bonus was that we were on the right side of it.
We'll get to the second one in a second. But wouldn't we have been better off had the government given every taxpayer 50 grand, 100 grand in vouchers to buy goods and services?
Well, it's a nice fantasy, George, but actually, if that had happened in practice, the inflation rate nationally would have been just insane.
People would have been buying everything.
Well, all prices would have been driven up. However, you know, some people have said that $1 trillion, and I think our deficit this year, the added deficit is going to be closer to $2 trillion this year, just this year alone. That does a lot for the stock market. So a lot of that has fueled the stock market, which has been doing phenomenally well. Some stocks doing better than others.
And then she wanted a yes or no.
She wanted any Illuminati. I don't even know what that is. I don't know. I mean, what is the Illuminati people?
They're globalists.
They're
as Alex will say, the puppet masters.
Yeah. I would say that I
boy, you're
that I likely
standing
am,
around there on that.
That
one.
I likely I likely do see myself as a globalist, and I would like the type of world where we all see ourselves as globalists.
I mean, do you hang around with the Rothschilds and people like that?
No, I've never met the Rothschilds. I have met the Kennedys. I have met the Rockefellers. I have met Henry Kissinger, Caspar Weinberger, James Baker. But really, when I was a much younger child, and they would visit my great grandmother's house.
Henry's a one world government guy.
He's been known to be so, from what I understand. Yes.
Yep, he sure is. Okay, we go to William in Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. Go ahead, William. You're up.
Yes. Thank you for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
The Financial Times online this morning has the headline, Deutsche Börse and New York NYSE unveil merger term.
Yep.
Okay. Now, the new chief sees future in derivatives. Mega, now I'm going on to something else. Goldman Sachs, because they're tied together. Mega high-speed computers placed next to each other in one room. In Goldman Sachs, trade commodities and stocks so mega fast speed that the average trader doesn't get in on it at all. 80% of the trading is done in Goldman Sachs mega high speed computers. The derivatives should never have been allowed. It's too late to get the horses back in the barn because the uber rich derivatives traders, the sugar daddies who fund our politicians, they will not allow the derivatives to be outlawed. The worst thing that's ever happened to the world was when that one president or those things that are in Washington allowed the derivatives to be created.
Yeah. Can I correct you on a couple of those points just for the heck of it? I like your diatribe, but listen, the Goldman Sachs, if they did all the trading, I'd imagine they'd only be trading to themselves, amongst themselves. Goldman Sachs in a building a campus in Princeton, New Jersey. They're basically trend followers, and I know the people that did the programming for their systems. We do very similar things that they do. We tend to take on the same type of trades that they do, but they don't. They're not 80% of the trading. They'd basically be trading amongst themselves, and what would be the profit in that? The second part of your thing that. What was the second part
of the derivatives?
The derivatives, evil derivatives. Derivatives were created because we ran out of money.
And explain what derivatives are.
Derivatives are derivatives could be options. They could be options on options. They could be things tied mostly to debt. And these were instruments that were created to ensure really crappy debt.
And it's basically an agreement between two parties, right?
Agreement between two parties to quote ensure on some level risky bets. And so you could advance all this credit out into the economy if you could sell a coincident level of derivatives. And so the derivatives were bad, certainly, but they were created for the purposes of allowing not only Americans, but Italians and people in Spain and the United Kingdom and Canada and all the rest of them the ability to, quote, keep on having the vacations and the cars and the plastic surgery and the liposuction that they were accustomed to.
How long have these derivatives been around?
Derivatives have been around for a while. I mean, you could even say that an option, a stock option, is a derivative. So, and then there's futures, and which are also tied into that whole world, which are, you know, a similar type of a thing. They're agreements to buy something at a set price for a set period of time. They've been around for a very long time, and the real purpose of derivatives were to, and I think still are, they're good for speculators if you want to speculate in them, and they're meant to offset risk. The derivatives market, though, is not regulated, though. So nobody really, this whole thing grew to such gigantuan size, and the trades are still out there, basically. And it's very difficult to unwind them. So the governments are, rather than dealing with unwinding those beaten monsters, which they have a hard time doing, they try to reflate the economy, which is what they're trying to do.
Does anybody ever make money in futures contracts?
Oh, people can make a fortune in futures contracts. In fact,
or the other way around, too.
Or the other way around. In fact, I know a number of futures traders that all they deal with is in commodities. One is a personal friend of mine, Ed Sakota, one of the market wizards. And Ed is rumored to have turned $5,000 into $25
million. $5,000 into $25
million? Yes. He's a little out there.
Ed, here's my check.
Well, I'm sorry?
Ed, here's my check, wherever you are.
Well, he's a good guy. He's actually, and he's in Alex's home country out there in Austin, Texas.
That is amazing.
Yeah, he's.
Is that true?
From what we know, it is true. Yeah, he's well respected, and he does very similar things that we do. You know, we buy strong markets, we sell weakness, we go with the flow of the markets, we go with the trend of the markets. And
who wouldn't risk $5,000 to make $25 million?
Well, I think it actually, from what I heard, it would have even been larger if the client hadn't pulled money out along the way. It would have been significantly larger.
Can you imagine that?
Well, it happens all the time. I know of a person who turned $30,000 into $900 million in Amazon.com stock here in Seattle.
Yeah, over what period of time?
Maybe 14 years.
14 years. That's
30
amazing.
Grand, 900 million.
Yeah. Well, you got to look for the right opportunities.
You do. You've got to be aware.
Let's go to Ken in Seattle, Washington. Go ahead. Hi, Kenny.
Yeah. Hi. Hi. So, listening to this, it sounds like a lot like the final outcome is to be a move to implement like something like a global eco-feudal communism. And I've got some questions. One is, in the end, where will the U.S. and my state's constitution and private property fit into these plans? And what will be done about countries, regions, or people who don't want to be in such a system or start out in the system and want to get out of the system? Is there any way to get out? Now I can move to another country. I can move to another state if I don't like something about the state I'm in.
I think you're
trapped
there.
What happens when we're global? And then, are there too many people on the planet, in your opinion, and will something have to be done about that? Those are my questions. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, I know where that question's coming from. well, let's talk about what his first question was about the Constitution and this and that. I think the Constitution is very important. I think the enlightenment of our founding fathers was these were enlightened people. You know, these.
Will we still vote for congressmen and senators and the president?
We might locally. Yeah, we might locally. That's possible. And then we might do something on a global basis too. I mean, sovereignty is important, but I think global sovereignty, as we consolidate globally, and which is what's happening, that's the trend that's occurring, is that we are consolidating globally. Our global sovereignty is also important. As for his other question about population control, there need not be population control because due to the fact that we're poisoning like fully 45% of all our aquifers with natural gas fracking and we're toxifying our environment. Fertility rates are falling in the Western world, and there are more men being born than more women being born than men. Sorry, and so the natural outcome of our misuse of the planet we live on is that we are basically exterminating ourselves
slowly. And he also wanted to know if he could move somewhere else. You can't under that scenario, can you?
Well, no. I think you can move wherever you want. I think increasingly there will be heightened technological monitoring of our whereabouts for sure, and that's a fact. But I think if you're a good player, you're a good intentioned person, and you're not strapping bombs to yourself and doing terrific things, I think you should have the freedom of expression and movement for sure.
Pat, driving in Virginia, it's the Rockies. Go ahead, Patricia.
Yes. I'm here in Virginia. I just got my taxes done. And the gentleman told me that if I made under $28,000, that the government will set you up a retirement fund. Now, here I am. I'm working hard every day. And I can't, I have a 401, but that's all I have. And it's definitely not free. So why is that?
I don't know, but I love the idea of this of a new government program where they just give you money. I've seen that guy Lesko on TV late at night with the big glasses. I love it. And under an Obama administration, I could believe something like that could exist. I could believe it. I've never heard of it, but in his logic and his team's logic, I think that they would feel that it must be.
Is he going to get reelected in 2012?
Oh my God. I'd tell you that I'd hope not, but who's the alternative? I mean, I don't know. The stock market's been doing very well, and the probability is probably that he does get reelected.
I would think if things got a little better by Election Day, he's got a good chance.
Yeah, and I'm not even saying I'm in favor of it, but I think it's probable.
I don't have to say who I'm in favor of or not because I don't take sides.
Yeah, I'm not taking sides either. I'd say it's probable, but I'm not taking sides.
Joe in the Bronx. There you go, Joe. We'll get you in.
Hi, how are you, George?
Good, Joe.
Damon?
Joe? Hi.
Hi. I have a question. Do you think that the U.S. will ever get to the point where we will have to rely on silver and gold to execute transactions instead of the dollar?
It's kind of cumbersome, really. I mean, we think about it because it's like this metal thing. Now, we did at one point have gold, and we did have silver money. We did. But I want you to think about this for a second here, and I'm not being anti-gold, but our economy has been so hyper-leveraged and inflated that there's no conceivable way that you could convert that to gold fully.
No, but you could if you bankrupt the country and start it all over. You could use gold as your standard, couldn't you?
Where would that that send gold to? $1 million an ounce? I mean, there's. It's been said that there isn't more than what one or two Olympic-sized swimming pools full of gold in the whole planet.
Well, you know what?
I mean, how do you? How would you? How would you convert hundreds of trillions or quadrillions of dollars of equity into gold?
I'm not sure there's even gold at Fort Knox. I think it's empty. Honestly,
I would agree with that. Yeah.
Matter of fact, a soldier was telling us he was guarding it, but they never gave him any bullets. What is
that's logical.
What does that tell you?
Well, there's no gold there.
Minute to go, Damon. So in a nutshell, it's going to happen. There's nothing we can do about it, and we got to make it work.
I think there's a lot you can do about it. The fact that we're talking about it, that we're debating it, that you've got people that are fired up about it, that are anti this or they're pro that, I think there's a lot we can do about it. We talk about it. We realize that change is taking place, and we start to get together and talk about what we want this world to look like, because it's ours.
Name of the book is The Day After the Dollar Crashes with Damon Vickers. His websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And also, do you do your own Twitter feed and Facebook, Damon?
Yeah, that's on damonvickers.com. We post our daily comments. Hey, thank you for having me on, George. I will continue being your faithful and loyal listener. I love your show. I love your program.
When I talk to Glenn Beck, tell him our show's bigger than his.
Okay? I'll try.
All right, thanks, Damon.
All the best.
Dan Galante, Will Wilkerson, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.